Live on stage at Sydney Opera House in Australia, that was Simple Minds and a great version of Waterfront. It's fantastic to welcome back to the programme Jim Kerr. How are you?
Doing good, Billy. You're right. It's a year since we saw you. We were just setting off on our travels at the start of the year, and it was a great pleasure having you with us in Australia in January, February.
We're coming to the end of a very successful year for Simple Minds. You played one of the biggest tours of your career. Jim, what would be your personal highlights of the past 12 months?
In a nutshell, the highlight's always the same when it comes to touring, Billy. The highlight is looking out from stage at the end of the night. And I know it sounds corny and all that, but it is the reason why we do it. The sense of purpose, the joy. Whether you see that in Australia, whether you see it in Scotland, whether you see it in Italy, or you see it in France, that's the reason. That's the reward. Everything else is nice, but it pales in comparison. So that's a highlight. Still to be doing this, still to be playing. I mean, I can't pick a city or a town, because wherever we go, we have great audiences. So it would be unfair. But it was pretty amazing in Australia. You were there to witness it. And equally so, I have to say, since I'm talking to you in Glasgow just now, those two nights at the Hydro were pretty special, were they not?
Yeah, they were absolutely fantastic. And I mean, Sydney Opera House for Simple Minds was a real kind of box ticked. It was one of the few big prestigious venues in the planet that you hadn't actually, for whatever reason, got around to playing. When you see, you know, great venues on the tour itinerary, does it just automatically make the heart and the blood pump a bit faster?
Well, I'll tell you what's great now, and I know it's something you would do as well if you were in my shoes, is that whenever I see the dates and I see a particular venue or a place, the great thing is now you can go online, and especially if it's a venue with great, great history. For instance, if you're in America, say, they've got all those amazing old theatres. And I remember back in the day, you know, you go in and someone would say, the Beatles played here in 1964 or something, and then you go online and it's, no, Charlie Chaplin played there.
Yeah.
The Marx Brothers played there. Al Jolson played there. Harry Lauder played there. It's a particular thing that I like to do, you know, bringing it up. Then when you go to other places, might be a football stadium where you're, I mean, we picked up our tour next year, for instance, starting at Easter, and the first five dates when I looked at it, Argentina, Chile, Brazil, Mexico. Now, I know you were the same. That's all the names, the football boots I used to have when I was 10. If you told me when I was 10, when I had a pair of Adidas Santiago, that we would be going to Santiago, if you told me that we'd be playing beside the Rio Plata in Argentina, you know, so I've always had a great sense of the geography, the historical geography, the social sense, the artistic sense. I still got a kick of going to all these places, and quite frankly, I have to pinch myself when I'm there.
You have just announced a summer show next year here in Glasgow. You're going to be playing live at Bellahouson Park on the 27th of June with your special guest, Future Islands, Katie Tunstall and Hamish Hawk. You must be really looking forward to that, because, you know, Bellahouson Park is a place that you've maybe gone to play football, you've had a walk through, but you've never actually performed there.
Well, it is, and also, although it's not quite 40 years, because it was 1986 where we played, not so far from Bellahouson Park, when we played Nybrox. And as you well know, Pollock Park and all that, oh, that's my neck of the woods. So it's definitely, it's my neck of the woods when I'm back in Glasgow. And it's been my neck of the woods ever, it's not so far from there. Been nice to sleep in my own bed that night, but been more serious. You know, what a great thing. It's always a tough one. I've had so many remarkable gigs in Glasgow from the very beginning. But there's very few places we haven't played. Well, until now, we haven't played in Bellahouson Park. In fact, we haven't been outside in Glasgow since the heady days of Ibrox in 86. So we'll be trying to conjure up some of the memories and some of the feelings of those glory days back then.
Playing at Ibrox in 1986, not just one night, but two nights, your special guests were Loy Cole and the Commotions, the Waterboys, Hipsway, and in Tuanua. And of course, on the second night, Loy Cole dropped out and you were joined by the Cult. Now, you made a little bit of kind of local musical history because you became the first Scottish band to headline an outdoor show in their own right. What do you remember of those two memorable and very historic gigs?
I mean, they're full of memories, of course. You look back now, and every time I meet somebody, they tell me their story of that day. Our own stories seem to grow arms and legs with every telling, but that's what stories are for. I mean, just when you mention all those bands there for a start, I guess it was really a moment in Glasgow, was it not? It really was. I think the Old Grey Whistle Test had sent people up from London as well to capture it, which back in those days, the Old Grey Whistle Test, they didn't really go into the sticks very much. So there was a kind of history was being made there. I don't mean we were making history. There was something great about something great for Glasgow as well. Glasgow, by the middle of the 80s, was starting to turn a corner as well. And I think whenever my memories, it encapsulates all of that. But of course, for us to play those two gigs, amazing gigs, and it felt like a moment within a generation in Scotland anyway.
You're going to be playing, as we said, at Belhousen Park on the 27th of June. And what's unusual or unique about the show is that for the first time ever, you're going to be playing Once Upon a Time from 1985 in its entirety. We'll talk more about that in a few moments' time, but let's hear it now. The title track from the 7th album from Simple Minds in 1985. This is Once Upon a Time. This is Billy Sloan on BBC Radio Scotland. You join me with my special guest, Jim Kerr of Simple Minds. The band are going to be playing live at Belhousen Park on the 27th of June with their special guest, Future Islands, Katie Tunstall and Hamish Hawke. And Jim, it's the first time that you've played Once Upon a Time in its entirety. The album topped the UK charts. It peaked at number 10 in the Billboard Hot 100. It was produced by the dream team of Jimmy Iovine and Bob Clearmountain. You, of course, came off the back of such great success 8 months earlier with Don't You Forget About Me. Why this album and why now?
Well, really, the why is kind of going back to what I was saying earlier. We've had so many great gigs in Glasgow that it's like, what can we do that will be a wee bit unique? Well, that's pretty unique because, as you quite rightly had said, we have never played Once Upon a Time in its entirety, and there are no plans to do it again. Whether that happens or not, I don't know, but hand on heart, there's no talk about a future tour of playing this album. There was no talk prior to this gig of playing this album. So Glasgow merits that from Simple Minds. It merits something a wee bit special. And as we were there not so long ago and had two amazing nights, we had to pull out the stops in some ways or other. So that's going to be a challenge, a beautiful challenge. And the good thing about it is, you know, sometimes when you say playing the album in its entirety, it sounds a bit kind of heavy duty. The great thing about Once Upon a Time is it's a very snappy album. Just about all of the songs are up. There are no ballads in it, for instance. So it's a kind of record, and I mean this in the best sense, that it's so energetic. We'll rattle through it, because when you listen to it, that's what it sounds like. But we'll also play all the songs that, you know, people would expect to hear, and we'll be doing our damnedest to make sure the weather's good as well. Someone told me it's a great weekend there. It's the weekend of schools break up, so there might be some wains getting dragged along as well.
It'll be snowing. No, in our luck, it'll be snowing.
Well, even if it is, it'll be the finest.
What do you remember about making Once Upon a Time? Because, you know, you had the late, great Jod Giblin in bass. Sadly, we lost him very recently. You also had Robin Clark and Carlos Alomar, who, let's just remind everybody, played on David Bowie's Young Americans. That must have been a big thrill, being in the studio with people like that that you'd admired from afar.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, the real thing was, it was very rarely did we have such a concrete plan. And the plan was, after Sparkle in the Rain, the plan was, let's go to America and let's break America. Now, that was a wildly unfashionable thing to do and think then. First of all, where do you get the gall to do that? So many bands, so many British bands came a cropper trying to break America. They lost their identity, they lost their fortunes, they lost their spirit. It just didn't happen. But we had the bit between our teeth. The band had gone through the door into the big league, as I say, everywhere in the world apart from America. And we thought, let's go and not just tour there, but let's work with Americans. Let's work in America. And let's see if we can make a special record. I mean, you know, at that time, there was great records coming out of America. Blair Mountain had worked with Roxy Music and Bowie and, well, Iovine. When you look at the cast of characters he'd worked with, from Springsteen to Tom Petty, Dire Straits, Patti Smith, U2. I mean, with the greatest respect to all the stuff that was going on in Britain, there was no one like that there. So, but we were kind of, before we got to go and break America, well, spoke about it a million times, so we'll just briefly mention it. This thing came out of the blue called Don't You and smashed the door open for us. But we still had to live up to that. We still had to go there. And of course, the other amazing thing, it's the anniversary next year, was that along with the success of Don't You came the opportunity to play at Live Aid, and which meant that we not only had to deliver on record with this new album, but we had 15 minutes to deliver on stage and show that we weren't just a sort of MTV video band.
And what were your memories of Live Aid? Because, you know, we, you know, had the British end over here at Wembley Stadium. I was lucky enough to be there. I was covering it in my capacity as the music writer for the Daily Record back in 1985. What kind of day was it for you guys in the band? Did you watch it in London on the TV before you left to go to the JFK Stadium? And then when you got there, you know, you were looking at people like, you know, the Beach Boys and Neil Young, and everywhere you looked, there was some famous face looking back at you, Mick Jagger, Tina Turner, Bob Dylan, etc. What are your memories of, you know, that incredible and very historic occasion?
Well, you've said it all there. I've seen all those faces and names. I mean, there was a wee hint of homesickness because for the time difference, we'd been able to see what had gone on at Wembley, and we wanted to be there as well. But we were in America. We were there to do a job. I've recently been, I'm working on a memoir, which to come. And so there's quite a lot of things fresh in my mind just now because I've been going over the past. And I just remember about 15 minutes before going on stage for what I think is the biggest TV audience ever still. Bruce Finlay, our manager at the time, we were in the sort of porter cabin and he'd shut the door. So it was just us. And we were all anxiously, you know, larking around and pacing up and down, dieting got on, you know, because this is different. This was a sprint, 15 minutes. And I remember Bruce probably already had a couple of drinks in him. He got up on a chair and he said, you know, he got everyone, shut up, I want to say something here. And he gave this sort of short speech. It's almost Bill Shankly style when I think about it now. What he said, and it was a great phrase, he said, "This is your Everest." And we're like, what are you on about? This is your Everest. You've worked on this for 5 or 6 years. You've already had this number one, "We Don't You Forget About Me." You've got 15 minutes to show America what Simple Minds can do live. Don't mess it up. Hit it straight away. The other guys were probably messing around, not paying attention to him, but the magnitude of it all hit me then. It was an amazing speech. This is your Everest.
And you were introduced on stage by none other than Jack Nicholson. You got to kind of hang out with him for a while, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, as usual, those things, you know, they're always so conscious of bands not going over time and stuff. So it was like time to go down to the steps towards the stage. And there standing at the bottom of the steps was the famous promoter, Bill Graham, who we had worked with about a year earlier, and he'd taken us to his home and all that in San Francisco, and, oh, there's Bill, our pal, and all that. But when we turned up, he was a kind of bull of a man, and he just leaned in, and he read us the riot. If you go 1 minute, there was no pause, if you go 1 minute over this, I'm going to, you know, you'll never work in this town again and all that stuff. I mean, it was intimidating as all hell. But he just said, so when you go up there, the presenter will meet you and he'll lead you on. But he didn't say who the presenter was. And as I've said many times, we went upstairs and wearing glasses, not unlike these right now, was Jack Nicholson himself, who we were obviously thrilled to see and made quite an impression as we stood there waiting to go on.
We're going to have another track now from Once Upon a Time, back to 1985. This is Simple Minds and All the Things She Said. Billy Sloan on BBC Radio Scotland. You join me in conversation with Jim Kerr of Simple Minds. Don't forget the band are going to be playing live at Bellahouston Park on the 27th of June with their special guests Future Islands, Katie Tunstall and Hamish Hawk. Jim, as we mentioned earlier, you're going to be playing Once Upon a Time in its entirety, and things just get bigger. You mentioned it earlier, things just get bigger. The songs, the lineup, the venues, and you know, whether you like it or not, you get criticism from some points of the media who reckon, for whatever reason, that this was Simple Minds selling out. You know, they were now playing in huge stadiums. They'd lost their kind of experimental magic. You were being a bit too bombastic. The truth of the matter was that thousands and thousands of fans wanted to see you, so you could not continue to play in 10 or 15,000 capacity arenas. Did that hurt you? Did it make any effect on you that people were saying that for whatever reason Simple Minds had kind of, you know, lost a bit of their magic by going big?
I'd love to tell you no, we didn't care, but of course it did. You know, even to this day, you know, but it's just part of what you have to go with what's in you. You have to go with that, or else you're lost. So you have to go with what's in you. My God, we wanted to work with Jimmy Iovine, we wanted to work with Bob Clearmount, we wanted to go to New York City, we wanted to take it on, and we wanted to be successful. Guess what? It worked.
But, I mean, there was a suggestion about the fact that you were now playing songs to 70,000 people as opposed to 15,000 people. The songs, for whatever reason, had kind of lost their edge because you were playing to the bigger audience, the wider picture. You know, did that get to you?
I grew up in a tower block, Billy. Size. Size to me. Size doesn't matter. Bring it on. It's nonsense. I mean, each to their own, but I presume if you put out a record, you want as many people to hear it as possible.
Of course.
I presume if you're going to go on tour around the world, you want as many people to come as possible.
Absolutely.
And if 70,000 people want to come, you're not going to play in a place that holds 2,000, are you? It's fairly logical. But I do understand the thing of those early culty days, because I was like that as well. Of course I understand that. You know, I understand when a band, you feel like you're with the first three Roxy Music records and then you've got to go and share them. You know, you're so protective. That's my band. So I did understand it. But listen, we were in good company. You mentioned, tell me one great artist that hasn't had a long career where within that career they've had periods where they have to cop it. I mean, you know, we put out a new record today and there's a lot of enthusiasm online, but not everybody likes it. I mean, that's just the way it is. But you've got to go with what's in you. You've got to be honest to yourself and listen. With it, not a bad draw, really.
This conversation is very timely because it couldn't have come at a more opportune moment, because later tonight on the BBC Scotland channel, they're showing the documentary Everything is Possible. And it's the first time that the band's amazing story has been told in documentary form. You had kind of reservations about doing something like that. Why was that?
We probably had about three or four approaches, and they were all, I mean, there was all something to them, but I guess I'll tell you what it was in a kind of emotional way. You only get to do these kind of documentaries when you're, shall we say, in the twilight, or presumed to be in the twilight. And I guess there was a resistance. We were kind of thinking, yeah, it's not that time yet. It's not that time yet, but it is that time. Because, you know, it'll soon be 50 years. We ourselves are getting on, and if we hadn't done it now, then yeah, someone else would probably have done it, and I dare say, I don't know if it would be as good or worse or better, but we had to do it in our way. It was our time, so we had to step up. And of course, how do you condense all of that, the journey we've been on, into an hour and a half. You can't. So you've got to try and conjure up a sense of the story, and you've got to, more importantly, try and capture the atmosphere. And I have to say, I've got to give full plaudits to the people involved, the director and the crew and all that, because they themselves, much younger than us, they weren't in Glasgow then, but I think they did a really good job of capturing the kind of atmosphere and backdrop that Simple Minds came out of. That's a good thing. I'm disappointed that Mick McNeil and Derek Forbes and Brian McGee, their voices are missing, but they were asked and they didn't want to get involved, but we had to get on with telling the story.
The film focuses on the incredible bond that you have with Charlie Burchill. You famously met in a sandpit in Tory Glen as kids, and your friendship has endured. How would you describe that relationship, Jim, with Charlie, both musical and personal? How would you sum it up?
I mean, people tell us it's fairly unique, and I suppose it is in the context of rock and roll, where notoriously partnerships fragment and fall apart, and, you know, you hear all these stories about Jagger and Richards falling out, obviously Lennon and McCartney fell out, and there's a million names you could mention. It's never happened to Charlie and I. It's just never happened, if anything, or a friendship. And I've got about four or five really close friends in my life, and you just get on with them. You don't agree with everything. The unique thing with Charlie is I also happen to work with him. But what can I tell you without being soppy, even to this day? He's the greatest guy, and he's the greatest guy to be around. And we're so lucky in as much that, how can I say this? It's not just that we get on kind of musically and we just get on because we're for the same street and all that. It's kind of remarkable. We love the same kind of books. We love the same music. We love the same food. We've both ended up with Asian women in our lives, which is just weird. It was never mentioned, just happened to be. We both fell in love with Italy the first time we came here. We're real Italophiles. I speak a bit of Italian. He speaks amazing Italian. Some people say he doesn't speak English, but that's another thing. You know, it's quite remarkable. We both have a certain penchant for one of the teams that plays in the East End of Glasgow. You know, there's just so much. If you say to me, what do you know? You know, what things do you not like? I've never been a drinker. I can't play anything. He can pick up anything and play it. I'm all chat and lyric, and he's all music. And that's the way he really, that's his best way of communicating.
Because we're talking to you at this moment in your adopted home in Taormina in Sicily, and there's a great closing clip at the very end of the Everything Is Possible documentary when you and Charlie are walking up the hill kind of laughing, making jokes and laughing with one another. And there's a piece of music that played that you kind of took on to the next level, and it was premiered this morning on Radio 2. It's your brand new single called Your Name in Lights. Do you remember the first time Jim Kerr saw His Name in Lights?
Oh, it would have been exciting. I'm not, you know, we're never blasé about anything like that. It's probably something like the Marquee, Billy. Just even saying that alone, the idea that you could play the Marquee. I think the first time we ever saw Simple Minds, Name and Lights, was the Marquee. I can't think any time before that. So that's quite something. But it's interesting. That's my favourite bit of film. It's the very end, where he and I are walking down. It's really, it's the hills above Taormina in Sicily where I'm just now, and we quite often go a hike or a walk up there. I mean, there's just no one around. And we put the world to right on those walks. Well, we think we put the world to rights. But we wanted to write a sentimental melody for the end of the song. One of the things the song talks about is that, in a sweet way, a lot of people very kindly, they refer to the distance the band has gone, they refer to the distance Charlie and I have gone musically, artistically, creatively. They start to talk about legacy. What do I think of the legacy? What do I think a legacy will be? And I say, there won't be any legacy. 20 years' time, or whatever, the music will be around for a bit, but when we stop, won't be that long. No one will remember anything. and that's fine, and that's the way it should be. And the song kind of addresses that. At the end of the song, there's a refrain, "This will all pass away, my friend, this will all pass away." And it's funny, the song is very deceiving. It sounds like just a little electro-pop ditty. If you really listen to the words, it's quite profound.
Let's hear it now then. The brand new single from Simple Minds, this is called Your Name in Lights. This is Billy Sloan on BBC Radio Scotland with my special guest Jim Kerr of Simple Minds. And Jim, this weekend I'm hopefully with a bit of luck going to be heading down to Manchester to see Paul McCartney play. He's 82 years of age. There's word on the jungle drums that the Stones are going to be touring again in 2025 with an 81-year-old Mick Jagger and an 80-year-old Keith Richards. We had the edge of you two on the programme a couple of weeks ago, and this is a question that I asked him that I'm going to put to you. Do you, after all this time and after all your incredible achievements, still have goals and ambitions? Are there still things that musically you're aiming at that you would like to tick off?
Well, I can tell you, last month, Simple Minds, let's say post-millennium, the last 20 years, the reboot, we've always worked on five-year plans. And last month, we signed off on yet another five-year plan. But there are no plans to do anything beyond that. And I think it'll be a less five-year plan. Things we do after that, I think, will be much more spontaneous or off the cuff. If you ask me why that is, it's amazing that McCartney and Mick Jagger, at their age, can still do what they want to do. But I really don't see myself in that way. I mean, I think Paul McCartney needs to do that. I think he needs to be Paul McCartney. I think Mick Jagger needs to go on stage because he needs to be Mick Jagger. I don't need to be Jim Kerr in terms of inverted commas. I've got an amazing life outside of this. And the only downside I perceive now, the way we are and the way we have worked and the way we've had to work, because you can't do this half-assed. You have to give 100%. It's a very selfish existence. You have to leave everything else goes to the side, family, friends, everything. And back when time was on your hands, you're not going on tour for a year. A year now, I mean, the biggest currency in our lives now is time. We don't even, to be blessed with good health, to last to the ages of Mick Jagger and Paul McCartney, time is really... And no, I don't think we will go on as long as I don't think that at all. I think we're coming towards the last 5 years, but who knows?
Let's hope it's an eventful 5 years, which I'm sure it will be. Just to remind everybody that you're going to be playing live with Simple Minds on the 27th of June at Bellahousen Park in Glasgow, the first time you've played that great outdoor venue. Your special guests are Future Islands' Katie Tunstall and Hamish Hawk. And we're going to finish with a song from the new reissue of Sparkle in the Rain. Thank you very much for taking the time and trouble to join us on the programme, Jim. It's always a great pleasure to have you on the show.
Billy, it was great. You've been a supporter from day one and you're still a supporter. We'll look forward to seeing you in Glasgow. See you before then. I think you're also going to be coming to Sicily for the first time, are you not?
Yeah, I am. I'm looking forward to it.
Looking forward to that. So there's plenty of stuff to be looking forward to next year. Wish you Merry Christmas. Wish our fans, all our fans, a Merry Christmas and a peaceful New Year. And we hope to see all of you next year.
Well, thank you very much for joining us in the programme. Let's go back to the Barrowland in Glasgow on the 28th of February 1984. This is Simple Minds and Speed Your Love to Me.